Moncrief's Fact of the Day.
This is so good, you'll need to sit down.
Only one pirate is known to have buried any treasure.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Moncrief's Fact of the Day.
Bet you didn't know that now, did you?
There you go now, and that is a fact that comes actually from a TV show called QI, just in case, mark your card for that. Might be hearing more of that in a moment. But on your text, still a huge reaction to the Tala Community School and their hookup with the International Space Station. I'm in bits here at work listening to the kiddies. The kudos. So much that my boss came over and asked me if I had bad news. It's so emotional to hear young people so invested in something like this. It is. It was a great report, really was. And I say yes to the dress. It is addictive, trust me. It's simple and repetitive, but it is addictive. During my 2-year engagement, I binged on it, and now I'm married and I still watch it. The Irish version is okayish, but the best one is filmed in Atlanta, Georgia, full of sassy southern brides. So good, even my husband will subject himself to watching it with me occasionally. So different kind of feelings on all of that. Now, when Sandy Toksvig went searching for a story about an Irish family forced to flee the famine and traverse the Oregon Trail in search of a better life, she couldn't find one. So she wrote one herself. Two, in fact. The End of the Sky is the sequel to A Slice of the Moon, and here to tell us more about it is Sandy Toksvig herself. Sandy, how are you today?
I'm very well for my age. How are you?
equally well for my age, I must say. I will talk to you of technical challenges, showstoppers, and much-loved participants being asked to leave. But this is a fascinating story in the book. You and the Irish famine, not two things I would have put together.
Well, I'm obsessed with history, and I have a tremendous passion and love for Ireland. My great aunt, who was a wonderful writer, she was called Sina Toksvig. She was married to an Irish poet and writer called Francis Hackett, and she spent many years in Ireland. And I reread her diaries from that time with great passion. But I wrote the story because I wanted to read the whole journey. I wanted to read the whole journey all the way from Ireland, what happened in the famine, all the way to New York, and then New York to Oregon. And I simply couldn't find it, the whole story. So I thought, well, I might as well write it if I want to read it.
It seems hard to believe there isn't one somewhere. So many people would have made that journey. You would have thought diaries of it exist somewhere.
Well, the really interesting thing is I read loads and loads of diaries. There are a lot of diaries of the travels across the sea, and there's quite a lot of diaries of the covered wagons, so the bit, what they call the Oregon Trail, which is about 2,000 miles across the United States. But the bit from New York to where they jumped off, as it were, into the wilderness and Independence, Missouri, I just hardly found anything at all.
Right. So to get yourself into this, you decided to drive the Oregon Trail yourself.
Yeah, I don't do things by half measure. I do the whole thing.
Not in a flatback wagon or anything like this, but what was it like?
It's fantastic, and I recommend it to anybody. You get a completely different side to America. I mean, I'm here to tell you that Wyoming is empty. There didn't seem to be anybody. There's not even a horse there. Honestly, hardly anything. And Nebraska's a lot of corn. But the vastness of America, and when you think about the fact that they walked it, because although they had the covered wagons, they were really pretty much too uncomfortable to get in. And anyway, they were full of, you know, the food they needed and the bedding and all that kind of thing. So they walked more than 2,000 miles. I mean, it took months and months and months. People were exhausted. More people died of disease than they died of the things that you see in any of the kind of Western movies.
Was it grueling for you? I mean, I assume you're in an air-conditioned car and everything else that go with it.
I was in a very nice car. Yes. Listening to country and Western music, so that was quite grueling.
Right. Was there ever a moment you thought, this is it, I'm getting out here and getting on a plane?
No, I loved it. I love the wide open spaces. I love the heartlands of America. I think they're absolutely fantastic. And I think you don't see so much of that on TV. But I have to say, people were amazed that somebody from Europe wanted to drive the Oregon Trail. We didn't meet anybody else on the entire trip who wanted to do the same thing.
You would have thought they'd have it as some sort of tourist thing at this point, wouldn't you?
Well, we did come across a few tourist things. So we were heading to a place called Pendleton in Oregon, and at the petrol station before we got to this town, I said to the woman, we're going to Pendleton, and she said, you won't get in. I said, I beg your pardon. It was odd not able to get into a town. It was rodeo time, and the Pendleton Roundup is so popular, people book it a year in advance. So she said, there's no way you're going to get to Pendleton. So that's a challenge.
Absolutely.
So I phoned up a motel, and I said, do you happen to have any rooms? And the woman said, well, we just had a cancellation, but I got to warn you, we're all drunk. had the most wonderful time. Had a fantastic time. 3 days in Pendleton. I recommend it to anybody.
Did you come over to Ireland as part of your research?
Yeah, I did. But I had been to Ireland many, many times. We had a lot of holidays there as a child. As my father was a keen fisherman. So I've tried to do the research as much as I possibly can and be accurate about the story, because it mattered to me that we tell it.
Right. You've written it for young and old, haven't you?
Yeah, do you know, I think there's such a thing as a sort of a family book. I mean, it was commonplace when I was a child for the whole family to read Little House on the Prairie or Little Women or such like. And I hope that this is a book that both adults and the, you know, the intelligent child will find interesting. Certainly it's an adventure story.
Yeah, I have an intelligent child, and I think she's in the right age bracket.
Read it together. Reading together is something that I would love to bring back. I think it's a really nice thing to do.
Yeah, so there's not, because when you're writing about a subject which has the Irish famine in it, obviously horror stories could abound.
Yeah, there were lots of unpleasantness, but you find a way of writing that, and we can't completely shield children. I wrote a story some years ago called Hitler's Canary about the escape of the Jewish population from Denmark during the Second World War, and kids can deal with it, and it's good when I go to schools that we're able to talk about, you know, what is prejudice about and what happens, why do some people get attacked and not others, and all those things. I think they're important things to raise with kids, and kids are bright, you know, it's not mess about, they can cope with this stuff.
I'll let you know. You seem to have the travelling bug. Did you catch that, would you say, because you spent a lot of time travelling as a child, didn't you?
Yeah, my father wasn't a big believer in formal education, so he was a foreign correspondent for Danish television, and so we were forever on the road with my dad. My first skill that I remember, age 4, was the ordering of room service. That was pretty much the first thing I was able to do.
What a brilliant skill, and so much more important than so many things you will learn in school.
I think so.
Would you have learned a lot from him, honestly, because he obviously travelling the world. He was Denmark's most famous foreign correspondent, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was unbelievably famous. And one of the things I learned from him is to not take fame seriously.
Really?
He was famous in a way that's hard for us to imagine now. So when my dad was on telly, all television, there was one channel in Denmark. It started at 7 o'clock, and you had to turn the television on 5 minutes before because it took a while to warm up. And then there was an hour and a half of television. And the first hour was my dad reading the news. There was no pictures, there was no footage, just him reading with a red telephone on his desk, except you couldn't see it was red because it was in black and white, which would ring occasionally with an interview. So my dad was 2/3 of all television. So he was really famous.
I don't know if we have an equivalent here. I'm thinking no. Gay Byrne, but I think not even Gay Byrne had anything like that grip on us for so
and
long.
He taught me that fame is not to... Well, is not important.
It's just as well that you learned that early on, because you seem to be destined for it from an early age. Are you wondering, when you were doing comedy when you were in university, you were with Stephen Fry even then, weren't you? Did you have the least inkling that your careers could end up presenting QI? Or
no,
a show
no,
even
so
like
what do you
it?
Know when you're 19? You don't know anything. I had no idea. It wasn't my plan. I trained as a human rights lawyer. I had every intention of being a lawyer, but then a director saw me in a show at university and said, come and work for me. And I thought, I'll have a gap year after university as well as before. I'm basically having the longest gap year in history. That's exactly what's happening. Any day now, I should go back to being a lawyer.
You would have liked it, though.
I would have liked it, yeah. I sometimes wonder whether I did the right thing, but you can only change the world in your own small way.
I can only tell you from the text coming in. I think you may have made the right decision. Just give you one. Sandy is my spirit animal. I love her unconditionally.
Oh, I like being somebody's spirit animal. That's rather fine.
See, you get
makes
a lot
sound
of
soft
that.
Soft and furry. I like that.
At the moment. So, I mean, just your path in career, it seems to have been just incredibly successful from the word go. There are certain breakthrough moments, though, aren't they? QI and taking over from Stephen was pretty significant, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, but what a great show to take over.
Absolutely.
I'd been a guest many times on the show, so I was really familiar with it. And I have to say, I was a little anxious when I sat in the chair for the first time, but in about 5 minutes, I thought, oh, yeah, I know how to do this. This is fine. This is facts and fun. These are my two favourite things, so we're going to be fine. And Alan Davis is a genius. So
and is this a true story that you needed a box to get into the chair?
That is true. So Stephen, as you may know, is a little taller than me. I think he's the same height as me when he's kneeling. And... I had his chair for the first series, and I couldn't reach the desk, so they made a box for it to stand on. But this year, just saying, got my own chair. I think that's quite significant.
You have arrived.
That's it. I never knew. Yes. That was show. Never mind about awards. That is show business success.
That is the moment. All of that must have been great preparation for stepping into the Bake Off.
Well, I mean, clearly I've stepped in before. Clearly, I'm the takeover queen. You can't worry too much. I knew that I loved Noel Fielding already before we started. I think he's amazing. As soon as I met Paul Hollywood and Prue Leith, it was a mutual love affair. So it's been easy. It's been going to work and hanging out with my friends.
There was never a moment of trepidation because, you know, obviously you would have read about it in the papers as well. You would have seen it was leaving the BBC. It was like a death in the family for many people.
I know, but you know what? We're respectful people, and it's a wonderful show, much loved by many people, and we haven't broken it.
No, you certainly haven't.
I think it's okay. I've been doing this a long time.
Yeah, there was a sense that the pairing, a lot of people are saying it on the text, that the pairing of you and Noel, as some people think, was absolutely genius. Did you know each other well before the show?
He'd been on QI with me both as a host and as a fellow guest. I adore him. I think I love how his brain works. I think I hadn't quite taken on board what a lovely gentleman he is. He's so lovely and soft. And I'm afraid the two of us now behave quite badly in the tent. We're often giggling in a corner when we shouldn't be.
Well, I think that's part of the charm, isn't it? That you feel those things are going on. It sounds like you're going to be friends for life. Are you going to each other's houses and baking together?
Well, he texted me this morning, because we finished last night doing the celebrity versions, and he just texted me this morning saying, I'm missing my Danish wife.
So, he calls you that.
I think probably. We're stuck with each other now.
A thing that strikes me too watching it is you seem very upset when people are leaving. You're very emotionally invested in them, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think people don't realise, you know, the show's an hour and a quarter, but we're in that tent for hours and hours and hours. And we spend a lot of time together. And when you see how hard everybody works and how invested they are in what they're doing, you can't help but get involved and emotional. And I'm afraid I'm a bit maternal. I can't help myself.
You're the most emotional I've seen of people who've had to give people the bad news.
I don't like it.
No.
I don't care for it.
You can hear
it
in your voice.
I have, just so everybody knows, I have no say whatsoever in who goes and who stays, and neither does Noel. We stay out of it.
All right, and rightly so.
It's too painful.
No. Now, a bit of a plot spoiler for people who are watching it behind, or planning to watch it next weekend, haven't watched Tuesday night's episode. We watched one of the eliminations just on Tuesday night. We all watch it as a family. I'm sure many people do. And the 11-year-old I've mentioned, she bakes a cake for it so that we can all really...
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
But nobody thought Liam was going to leave. What happened?
You know, it was really painful. You know, it has to be that show's bakes. And, you know, he wasn't so blessed with his showstopper. I'm not part of that decision-making process. But as, you know, Paul will say, it's a baking competition and you have to stand and fall by what you baked that day.
He just had a bad week, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was as simple as that. A lovely moment.
But who doesn't love him? Who doesn't love him? He's a gorgeous boy.
Yeah, I think everyone thought he'd make it to the final.
I know. It was painful.
Very painful. Noel comforted him, gave him a little kiss at the end. That was very touching.
Oh, Noel is honestly, he's just the sweetest. He's the sweetest, nicest guy. The affection between all of us has been one of the great joys of doing the show.
Do you keep in touch with the contestants or do you see them?
Yeah, I have a WhatsApp group with
Do you
with
really?
Bakers. I do. I'm very modern. I'm very trendy.
And you don't delete people after they've been sent home?
No. Not like that.
I didn't think so. For a moment. You mentioned the celebrity one. Are you able to tell us anything more about that?
No, apart from we have some fantastic celebrities on, and it doesn't matter whether you're a comedian or an A-list Hollywood star, the nerves are the same.
And they have to bake.
Yeah.
They have to bake.
And they want to win.
Yeah, wonderful. Loads of people asking questions for you. People are very curious about where you used to go to when you were in Ireland.
All sorts of places. I'm trying to remember where we used to go to a wonderful place to go fishing. Castle Connell we used to go to go fishing. Tiny little place that my father used to rent a house in. I have been, I've had wonderful singing times in many pubs that shall remain nameless.
There isn't a statue there. That's in County Limerick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no statue or anything down there.
could you get on with it, please?
Yes. Please tell Sandy I've loved her since she did Whose Line Is It Anyway, and that her lovely sad head when she says goodbye to the Bakers makes this heavily pregnant woman weep. Laurie in Cork.
Keep it steady.
Yeah. Can you come around to mine for a cup of tea? I need you to be my friend. That's Roisin in Cork. A lot of love for you in Cork. Sandy and Noel, the best thing about the Bake Off, now that Liam is gone, I'm watching you purely for them. Sandy should have been presenting it from day one.
Well, that's very kind and I appreciate that.
Much love. Much love indeed.
Isn't it nice? Do you know what? Do you know what is really nice? And I genuinely mean this. I love the fact that there is a television programme that we can all watch together and that it isn't mean and it isn't horrible about anybody. And actually you just feel the affection in the show. And I think, do you know what? I think it's good for us all, frankly.
It is. And I think as an idea for a show, when you look at it now, it's, you know, whoever had that idea in the first place, fair play to them. And it is something you watch as a family too. That thing about my child, you know, baking a cake. She tries to mimic the cakes that you're doing. So,
but don't you think that's wonderful? And I'm I know I said it earlier on about reading, but I think we could do the same with books. I think we can find books where you think, okay, we're all going to read this together and then we're going to have a conversation about it. And it's a really pleasurable thing.
I'm going to do that. That's a little plan for me. People are often asking you also about where you were for the moon landings in the 60s.
I don't know how this story goes. Yes.
There's more to this, is there?
As I said, that my father took us all over the place, and particularly when I grew up mostly in the United States. So 1969, when the first man stepped out, Neil Armstrong stepped out onto the moon, things were different in those days. There wasn't so much security. So me and my brother, we were as close to the rocket taking off at Cape Kennedy in Florida as a human being was allowed to be. And then we moved to Houston, where Mission Control was. And we wondered about Mission Control. And I was standing in Mission Control as we were waiting for Neil Armstrong to step out onto the moon. And there was a woman next to me. She looked rather nervous. I said, "Are you all right?" And she said, "Well, my boss is about to step out onto the moon." And I said, "Don't worry. I'll hold your hand." So when people say, "Where were you when he stepped out of the moon?" I was holding Neil Armstrong's secretary's hand.
How amazing is that?
It's weird, right? It is. I have had a strange life.
It is brilliant. We should be reading The End of the Sky as soon as we can. That's out on the desk. So I look forward to that. And Sandy, what a pleasure it's been talking to you. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.